A matchup that many in college basketball were anticipating, Purdue versus UConn. I'll recap the semifinals on Saturday night to set up an epic clash for a national championship tonight. South Carolina was too much for Caitlin Clark and Iowa to handle as they fall short of winning a title. And what's this about John Calipari moving on to coach Arkansas? The good and bad teams of the first 10 days in Major League Baseball were down to the final week in the NBA with the NHL not too far behind. It's an enormous week of sports forthcoming, and I'll uncover it all over the next hour. It's all coming up, but first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right. No 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste. How could I forget? The taste. Crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reel's here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular. Just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reel's podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reel's as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, direct, and in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, Michael people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. A national champ was crowned on the women's side of college basketball yesterday with the men's championship game tonight. The NBA is about to wrap up their season with the NHL right behind them. The Masters will tee off on Thursday. The NFL draft later this month. Baseball's in full swing. This is why April is the best sports month on the calendar. And even with an earthquake on Friday here in the Northeast and a solar eclipse on the way today, I'm here to detail every nook and cranny as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first-timers, welcome aboard. And for those who have been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Thursday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And yes, it's been a wild and crazy time. Not only in the world of sports, thankfully, as we're into April and with everything that's taking place, but with an earthquake that happened on Friday, which is the first time I've ever experienced anything like that. Living in New York, it's not as if we're over a fault line, but who knows, with the stars aligned, with a solar eclipse today, and with everything else that's happening in the world, who knows, to have that little rumble for about 3 to 5 seconds, and even though I never experienced one until Friday, but when I felt it, I said, that must have been an earthquake. Because for just the building to shake the way it did, and it almost had like a little bit of a rumble and made me think for a second like, uh-oh, what is happening? Sure enough, that was the case. And for a solar eclipse today, watch it be a big bust. Now, of course, you want to have clear skies in order to experience this. But me, I could take it or leave it. I get it. It's one of those once in a lifetime type of situations. But come 3:20 here in the Eastern time zone, we'll have a chance to look out the window. Or if you get outside, make sure you wear protective eyewear in order to witness what will be complete darkness for I don't even know how long it will be. So we got that cooking later on today. And who knows, by the time you listen to it, it would already be had come and gone. But the reason why you're here is sports, and I appreciate you carving out some precious time out of your day to listen to what it is that I have to say about what's going on in the world of sports. And we'll start off with what's going to happen tonight. I'll get to the women's a little bit later on. But I would think, unless you live in Raleigh, North Carolina, or in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, we got the college basketball game that we were hoping to watch. And boy, is it going to be a big-time clash of the Titans. And yes, would have been nice for NC State and for their magical run, and even Alabama getting to their first ever Final Four, if they were one of the last two teams standing, to see if they have an opportunity to wear that glass slipper come roughly right about midnight tonight when you think about it. But let's face it, this was, I'm not going to say it was a scenario where they didn't belong or they didn't deserve to be on the same court as these two teams, but we saw the cream rise to the top, and I'll take a look at the games in a moment. But when the big picture has been formed, and when you look back to the start of this tournament, and a lot of people would have thought that Purdue, a team that had a lot to prove, a team that came in again as a one seed, going back to last year and losing in the first round, second time it ever happened in the history of the tournament, to where a 16 seed beat a one. But there's a lot of parallels there. And obviously you know about them, and I'll get to them briefly in a moment. But for Purdue, knowing that they needed to get a big run, knowing that they needed to get to a Final Four, and even on top of that, had a relatively easy bracket. And even though their games, the Tennessee game I know was pretty close, and Gonzaga tried to give them a little bit of a run, but Purdue has pretty much dominated throughout the first five games of the tournament. And this is where they stand now, as they have one more mountain to climb to get to that mountaintop for the first time in school's history to win that national championship. And of course, they're going up against a team that won a championship last year and are looking to get their sixth in the last 25 years. And think about that. They won the three under Jim Calhoun, the one under Kevin Ollie, and then this year, or last year I should say, number five, and looking for number six. And for Purdue, the storylines, they tie in with Virginia. That Cavalier team, 2018, when they lost in the opening round, the first time ever a one seed got knocked off by, what is it, the University of Baltimore, Maryland, or UMBD, or I got the letters all mixed up. But when they lost in 2018, were embarrassed to be the first team to ever lose as a one seed in the opening round. And then what did? They came back the following year to win a national championship. Are the stars aligned for Purdue, granted that they're going up against a defending champion? We'll have to wait and see tonight, and I'll get into the game in a moment. But for Saturday and what we saw there between NC State and Purdue, that was the first game. And Purdue, not to say they were on the ropes, not to say that it was a game that NC State had controlled. Now, they tried to do whatever it took to disrupt the big man, to try to get in his face, to try to just be a pest. Because as we all know, Zach Edey coming off of that regional final where he scored 40 points and had a ginormous game to get to this point of the Final Four, NC State did whatever they could. Whether it was DJ Burns and company, the other kid Middlebrooks who did a very good job, it was a situation to where they tried to do whatever it took to slow the big man down, to not make big plays. And even though he ended up with 20-10, maybe it wasn't a situation where a lot of people thought that he was going to have that 28, 30-point game with 16 rebounds. And yes, when you look at the box score, it certainly wasn't sexy, but it was effective. And the one thing that you like about Purdue in this game to at least bring you to this point to a national championship, they didn't fold. They didn't look at the opposition knowing that they were a big-time underdog. And even though they were playing with house money, but they didn't let their play dictate what Purdue was going to do. And it showed a lot of mental toughness and a lot of fortitude to get through that game. And I get it. They weren't a two seed or even a one seed that Purdue was facing. They were certainly going up against a game team, a team that was trying to even channel that 1983 Jim Valvano championship year of 41 years ago. And they were going to try to do whatever it took to get to a championship game. And Purdue, like I mentioned, they didn't fold. They played very well. And even with the, I'm not going to say subpar performance of their big man, but they certainly took it to NC State when they absolutely had to. And Edie had played a tremendous game for him in that scenario, in that regard, to where it wasn't going to be, I'm not going to say a cakewalk, but it wasn't going to be a scenario where he was just going to get his points at will. And for NC State to do what they tried throughout the course of the 40 minutes, and even though they were having trouble scoring, they were at a point where they didn't score in 10 straight possessions, and the same for Purdue for that matter. So it wasn't a great game overall. When your final score was 63-50, of course, it's not going to be one of those track meets up and down where people are scoring at will or players are scoring at will. It was a scenario where it was a bit of a slog in that second half and certainly wasn't a great game overall. And for DJ Burns, a guy who had a monster game against Duke to get themselves into the Final Four, was anything but that. Had 8 points, was the non-factor there as far as the score sheet goes. And when you're going to slow down the big man there, and even though DJ Horn had a very good game in his own right, it still wasn't enough. You were going to need contributions from a lot of different places, and especially your big player, your key player, DJ Burns, who did not have that. And of course, it was him and Edie going at it throughout the course of the evening. But for Purdue, this was a game, mentally and psychologically, they pushed through, they battled, and they were able to come out on the other side victorious. And to me, that's going to bode well for them tonight against UConn. Because people think that Purdue, throughout the course of the Matt Painter tenure there in West Lafayette, and I called it Fort Wayne, I'm thinking back to Rod Woodson, his days when he grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and of course he went to Purdue. But yes, West Lafayette, where the school is located. To me, this was a big step for them. And that's not to say that it's going to translate to tonight, where it's going to be a guarantee that they're just going to go out there and dominate. And we're going to talk about the game in a moment as far as the Purdue-UConn matchup. But I like what I saw there. And I think that's something you have to keep in the back of your mind, that even if they get into a slugfest, or if they get into one of those dirty roll up your sleeves, it's going to get nasty, filthy. Not to say it's going to be a chippy game, but Purdue, although this is going to be just a whole nother level of competition, you're going to go up against a defending national champion. But I thought this is one that you're going to have to think about tonight, when the two teams are going to go at it and how that game could translate to tonight's game. And as far as the nightcap with Alabama and UConn, now, here's the one thing about UConn, that even with Purdue and the game that they played there Saturday, they are as resourceful as any team as we've seen in quite some time. Now, granted, they have not played a close game, it seems like, in forever, especially when it comes to the tournament. They played 11 games. They didn't really have to sweat out any of these games. Maybe you could go back to the opening game of last year's tournament when they were playing Iona, where Rick Pitino was the coach, and I believe they were trailing late in the first half in that game, or maybe it was even early second half before they turned on the Jets and cruise to a victory. But they have not had a moment over the last 2 years where you could really think like, oh, geez, this is crunch time. This is a moment where UConn's going to have to show their mettle, their toughness, etc. They haven't had to show that over the course of the last 11 tournament games. And when you look at the way UConn had performed there just 2 nights ago, how Alabama, they were going to try to shoot the lights out of the ball, and they had moments where they did. And that was a team going into the Final Four where Mark Sears was just shooting the lights out from three. But when you have a team that could play any type of game, they could play a game that goes up in the 80s, or they could even play a game that's in the 50s. They're a Swiss Army knife of a unit that where the game, however it's going to be dictated, now they want to play on their terms, but it's a thing where, oh, wait, you want to play a game that's going to be similar to a, as I called it before, a track meet, where we're going to go up and down the court, shoot threes, open lanes, dunks, layups, etc. We could play that game. Or we could play the half-court game. And for UConn to have contributions, especially from a guy like Stephon Castle at 21 points, And, of course, Donovan Clingan, the guy who's going to be the big focal point of tonight's matchup against Zach Edey, he defended well, especially in the second half. And even though it was a bit of a battle in that first half, but once you got to the second part of that game and for the Huskies to defend and make those adjustments and have the type of contribution that you're going to get from your key players. And then on top of that, Alabama, you can see it was starting to slip away. And before you know it, that's when UConn just cruised to victory. And again, it wasn't as if the Huskies had to really get just downright dirty in order for them to try to eke out a game or to be in a battle where they were pretty much fighting for their lives. Not the case. And therefore, you have your number one versus your number one Clash of the Titans, Boilermakers, Huskies tonight, TBS, TNT, whatever it's going to be, I believe, on both of those channels. Wish it was CBS like back in the day, but we understand this is 2024 and we get it that all these networks are going to have their hands in the pot. But for tonight's game, to me, this is what, like I said, every, not only just college basketball fan, but I think even every sports fan would look forward to watch. Standalone game. Not many people are going to be wrapped up in the baseball. Who knows about NBA and NHL as they get down to the final precious few games in their seasons. I think a lot of the sports fans going to tune in tonight. And I get it. It would have probably been nicer if you had NC State, especially them, to go up against UConn. But that's not the case. You want to see the All-American Zach Edey try to get that one last game for his coach, for that school, and even for that city. And maybe even for the state for that matter. Considering that the Hoosiers, as we all know, that's the one team or the one school in that state that just reeks college basketball history. But for Purdue to know that it's right in front of them, and for UConn, the same for them, to be the first team to win back-to-back national championships since the Florida Gators, that's the Joakim Noah, Al Horford, Corey Brewer-led team, and coached by Billy Donovan. So for these two teams to go at it tonight, I think could have a big-time rating. I hope we get a great game, maybe even a borderline classic, because with these type of games, you just never know. And how I look at this game tonight, everybody's going to look at the big men. Everybody's going to look at the Edey versus Clingan matchup, and understandably and rightfully so. And the reason why I say that, and this is not going out on a limb, people, but if Edey could somehow, some way get Clingan in foul trouble, which I think would be huge, not to say that that's going to be the downfall of the Huskies in this game tonight, but Edie's going to have to impose his will, and he's going to even have to have more mental fortitude tonight than he would on Saturday night, because he's going up against champions. He's going up against team or a team that is familiar with this scenario. Been there, done that, looking to repeat, etc. And I think that the Boilermakers, as much as they're going to depend on Edey, they're also going to need to be dependent on their guard, for who had a bad game there on Saturday night. Braden Smith, he's going to need to have a big-time game in order for the Boilermakers to win a national championship. And that's not saying much. I mean, that's not, to me, that's just a statement where I'm sure a lot of people are saying that throughout the course of America today. But Edey, we wouldn't expect for him to have that 30, 35, 40-point monster game. If he does, they're probably going to win the whole enchilada. But Smith, like I mentioned, who I believe went 1-for-9 from the field, did not have a good game from three. He's going to be that guy that if they're going to try to double team Edey, or if they're going to have to kick it out to Smith, he's going to have to knock down those shots. Because there is no way, shape, or form that it's going to be all on the shoulders of the big man. And if that's going to be the case, I'm sure Painter's going to want to go to him to try to get Clingan in foul trouble, to try to wreak as much havoc in the paint, just so he could have that open space, whether it is for Edey or whether he does kick it out to his guards. That, to me, is going to be the big-time game plan for Purdue to win a national championship. And for UConn, again, they could get it from so many people that it's not going to be all dependent on Clingan or any of the other guys on the team. Stephon Castle, I know, had a big-time game there the other day or on Saturday. Where would we expect to see that happen again? Probably not, but Caravan is also a kid that could make a big-time contribution. We know that UConn, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, their resourcefulness is as good as any college basketball team that we've seen in quite some time. And this is rarefied air to have a team get set to go back to back, especially over the last 4 or 5 years between NILs and transfer portals. And we know about the one and dones. But remember, this is a team that had 3 players go to the NBA last year. And here they're on the cusp of winning another national championship. So that is just kudos to the coaching staff, to the administration, AD, to have these players that are very cohesive under Coach Dan Hurley to have an opportunity to win another national championship. And how I look at it, it's tough because there's a part of me that wants to root for Purdue. I'm a Big East guy, tried and true, but I can't stand UConn going back to my days where UConn and Georgetown were really going at it in the 80s and even in the 90s for that matter. And I got to give credit to what UConn has done here over the course of this 25-year run. And even recently, over these last 2 years. But I wonder if the college basketball gods, knowing what happened to Virginia just 6 years ago, and then the year after winning a national championship to erase the embarrassment of what happened the year prior, I kind of get a sense that this could happen again just a half dozen years later. And for Purdue, I think that they have a great opportunity to win this thing. Not because of the obvious, but because there is a little bit of that pixie dust. Now, mind you, they're a number one seed. It's not as if they're a Cinderella by any stretch. But I would think Purdue, and mind you, we could only hope that what happened there on Saturday night built them for this game tonight. Because like I said, it's pretty much been an easy stretch of the first 2 rounds to get to this point. And even Saturday night, there was a bit of a rock fight with NC State. But I really truly think if I had to be a betting man, and I'm not, I think UConn's going to win the game, but something tells me Purdue's going to win. And just based on that alone, I think Purdue's going to eke out a close game. I think Edie, he is set to close out his college career with a national championship before he goes on to the NBA. And I'm not going to say that Clean's going to get into foul trouble. That we can't predict. But something tells me, based on what we saw Virginia experience, and not to say it's an automatic, but I really truly feel that the Boilermakers are going to come out victorious, because to win back-to-back, it is tricky. And this is going to be, by far, UConn's stiffest competition to date. Because remember, last year they beat a 5 seed in San Diego State for the national title, and they beat a 9 seed in Miami. So now, when you look at the just this run here, and they beat Alabama, who was a 4 seed, now they're going to go up against a true number one. And who knows? This game could dictate early on, midway through, or even late, that this is the first time they're going to have to sweat. And we haven't seen them in that setting be a team that if they're down 5 with 4 minutes to go, that's not to say they can't overcome and win the game, but they haven't experienced that. They haven't done that. And you can say the same for Purdue throughout this stretch here. But who knows? Purdue may be able to sense it. They may be able to even feel it when we get to that latter part of the game. And I think they're going to eke out a close win and they'll be national champions. But again, if I had to bet money on it, how could you not bet for UConn here? Knowing that they're going to go for back-to-back, knowing that they've been down this road before, and it's easy to even pick them in that regard. But I think Purdue, not to say it's their time, but maybe somewhere up in the sky, someone's going to look out for them. And this could be the night to where Purdue will finally get that national championship. Now, as far as the women's game, I could talk about yesterday. I want to go back to Friday night first, though, because you had the 2 games there where South Carolina, they handily beat NC State, and maybe that was a sign of things to come for the men's the following night. But South Carolina, undefeated, trying to erase what happened last year when they lost to Iowa in the semifinals. And, of course, the collision course of those 2 teams playing against one another there yesterday. But before I get to that, Friday's game ended up being a thriller in those final couple of seconds, only because Iowa was very sloppy with the ball. They turned the ball over twice, gave up a 3. Next thing you know, the one player, Hannah Stoltze, who had a very good game, he had 23 points in that semifinal. She had an errant pass that was intercepted by one of the UConn players. And then when they looked like they were ready to take the lead, which is seconds to go, an offensive foul, which was certainly questionable, but I get it. That was a call that maybe if it was in the regular season, they may not have called that. I could see if you're UConn, you're going to be frustrated, although Gino Auriemma in the postgame did not attribute to that was the reason why they lost. But Iowa was able to hang on, and Caitlin Clark, who had 20 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, didn't have a vintage Caitlin Clark type of game, but they gutted out that win. That was huge. Based on the rating that we saw there Friday night, where 14.2 million people watched, unbelievable for a college basketball game on the women's side, and that's a great thing. And that set the stage for yesterday, and right out of the gate, the Hawkeyes came out, 7-0 lead, led by 11 in the first quarter, and you thought to yourself, oh, wait a minute. They have, not to say that they were on the ropes, the Gamecocks, but because of the slow start and with Iowa flying out of the gate, you probably thought that a lot of the momentum would have just continued to build for Iowa throughout the course of the game. But as it was, far from the case. The Gamecocks then started to get themselves back on good footing. They took a lead at the half. And this is a team that's not a three-point shooting team. They're not one of those type of teams that even if they're trailing, they're more methodical. They're not the team that's going to chuck up threes to try to get themselves back in the game, or even from a standpoint of, let's say they're trailing big, it's like, uh-oh, we got to now start shooting from beyond the three-point arc to try to get back in these games. Not the case, but considering they didn't shoot well against NC State on Friday night, but yesterday, I believe they were, what, 8-for-19? They had a lot of big-time contributions with the combination of Bree Hall and Tessa Johnson, and once they got into the second half, then they just took off. And at that point, you kind of thought that Iowa, who knows if they were going to be able to come back. Now, they did cut it to 5 with about 4 minutes to go in the game, but you never thought that the Gamecocks were going to be in any danger, even with Iowa coming back and cutting it to technically 2 possessions. But for Dawn Staley, the head coach of the Gamecocks, knowing that they lost to Iowa the year before, and I know I didn't bring that up based on Thursday's podcast heading into this Final Four because I wanted to see them go at it quite possibly in a championship game where we didn't know what was going to happen here. We felt that South Carolina was going to advance, and even Iowa for that matter, but it is UConn. Granted that they weren't a vintage UConn team, so I didn't want to count my chickens before they hatched and say that, oh, well, if Iowa and South Carolina meet up. No, not the case, but now that the game, obviously the matchup and the outcome certainly is already in the books. Iowa, another tough championship loss. And last year, same scenario where they got to a championship game, losing to LSU, and here they were going up against an undefeated team that I'm sure they were licking their chops knowing that Iowa had gutted out those final few seconds against UConn and knowing that they could exact that revenge from last year and have another undefeated season under their belt, and they were able to put the cherry on top to their season by winning their second national championship in 3 years. And Staley, her third title overall, third in 7 years, very classy in the postgame, saying that Caitlin Clark is the GOAT, where we could debate that back and forth. But very gracious of her to say that in the post-game celebratory speech. And then for Caitlin Clark, another tough loss, has no regrets, left it all out on the floor, which he absolutely did throughout the course of these last 2 years. And Clark will now, of course, go on to the WNBA, as I'm sure she'll be the number one pick in the draft. And for the MOP, which is the most outstanding player in this tournament, or really in the Final Four, I should say, that went to Camila Cardozo, who had 15 and 17 in the championship game. And South Carolina, what could you say? 38-0. I believe they're the third or fourth team in women's college basketball history to win back-to-back undefeated, where obviously UConn did it a million times, even going back to the Tennessee teams in the 90s under Pat Summitt. And there was another team that's eluding me at the moment, but just a great job by South Carolina all year, and congratulations to Dawn Staley. And that's what you have there with the women's game. And tonight we'll get to see what's going to happen. Tune into my YouTube channel at JReels for instant reaction or just a recap, whether it be late tonight or even tomorrow for that matter. So before we even get to the podcast on Thursday, which we'll have a couple of days behind us. You want to get the overall feeling of the game tonight, you don't have to wait till Thursday. Just go to my YouTube channel again, at JReels, for reaction on the championship game tonight between Purdue and UConn. And then, what happened, speaking of last night, where breaking news, John Calipari is close to finalizing a deal with the Arkansas Razorbacks to become their next coach. Now remember, check those receipts. When Kentucky lost to Oakland after the first round there on Thursday, and that was what? Last Monday's podcast, or is it two Mondays ago now that I think about it, it made me think how Calipari, although he didn't win a title there with Anthony Davis in 2012 and had an undefeated team in 2014 get to a semifinal where they lost to Wisconsin, but pretty much since then, Calipari has done close to nothing. Now that the Aaron Fox team, remember, they went to a regional final, and that was in what, 2017, I believe? Because that was the year where they beat Lonzo Ball in the regional semi, and then they lost in the final that year. And off the top of my head, I can't remember. But that was the last time he had any success in the tournament. And when you're John Calipari, A, and when you're 1A or A1, however you want to call it, Kentucky, where it's all about championships. It's not about winning a regional final or getting to a Final Four. No. It's about winning championships. And considering he lost in the first round to St. Peter's 2 years ago in the opening round, and then just this past few weeks ago to Oakland, made me really wonder whether or not John Calipari, and I get it, the landscape of college basketball is a complete 180 from what we've seen going back to his days at UMass when he made it to a Final Four under Marcus Camby, or even with Memphis when he had Derrick Rose. And I get it, there was a lot of scandal involved regarding that time where they went to a championship game and they had an 8-point lead with about 2.5 minutes to go when they gagged it to Kansas. Mario Chalmers, the big shot there. But even with all the success that he's had in the tournament and only one championship to boot, and for him to really fall flat on his face through the last 3 years, it made me think, wait, what's going to happen here with Calipari? Not to say he was going to get fired, or not to say that his legacy, which you could say could be tarnished to a certain extent because he has not been as successful as he has throughout the course of his resume, although it is a very impressive resume to speak of. But recently, it really made you think whether or not Calipari, has he lost his fastball? Well, I guess he hasn't, because now he's going to go to Arkansas, which, who knows? Was it the pressure? Was it the higher-ups there at Kentucky, where maybe there were some whispers about, we don't know if Cal's going to be the guy here, considering the climate that we live in with the transfer portals and the NILs and not being able to recruit the way he had recruited dating back to his days? I understand that was almost 30 years ago at UMass. But for Calipari, who has really fallen on hard times, and I understand nobody's going to shed tears for him or for Kentucky for that matter, but it really made you question whether or not he was going to be built to last, and I believe he still had 4 more years left on his deal. Now Kentucky doesn't have to worry about that, because unless they fired him, they would have to pay him off. But now that he's going to jump ship to go to Arkansas, which you could certainly question that, because he's made a living of doing that, whether it was UMass to the New Jersey Nets, or New Jersey Nets when he went to Memphis, and then with the scandal there surrounding Derrick Rose after that 2008 season where he then went to Kentucky, and then now he's going to go to Arkansas. So I tell you, Calipari, there is a blemish there. There's no way he could cut it. And Arkansas, he's going to stay in the conference in the SEC, which I'm sure that's going to be hotly contested when they play one another over the course. I believe it's a 5-year deal that he's going to sign there in Little Rock. But all I can say is this. I don't know if by him going to Arkansas is going to make him that much of a better coach. Because if he doesn't have the players there, and unless it's going to be circa 1994 with Nolan Richardson and Scottie Thurman and Corliss Williamson and guys like that, where, what was it, 40 minutes of hell? Unless they're going to channel that team into this team and have players that are similar to that championship team, then I can see Calipari, yeah, he's going to make the tournament, or he may win SEC championships, or he may have some success in the tournament. But if you're John Calipari, it's championship or bust. That is the standard. You're not just some middle of the pack or mid-level coach that's just trying to be successful and maybe get to a regional final or final four. You don't have that reputation of a coach that's going to just rest on winning conference championships or getting to a regional final or maybe losing in the semifinal in the final four. It's all about winning national titles. And Calipari, I'm sure he's smart enough to know that that's the case, but does he automatically think that by him going to Arkansas and whatever he's going to try to do to recruit or bring players to his school and for them to have any success to go amongst the likes of now, which will be his former school, Kentucky or the Kansases or the North Carolinas, the Dukes, going down the line, that automatically he's going to have that type of success based on his resume? I don't think so. And I can't see that being the case just by him going however many hundreds of miles from Lexington to Little Rock. But we'll have to wait until the fall and see what kind of players that he's going to bring in order to see if this experiment. And I think, kudos to Arkansas. They had to do it. They're bringing a big-time name into their institution. They're bringing some credibility, etc. But to me, based on his recent performance, it is a far cry from him going to be an automatic to bring national titles to that school. So that's what I got with the college basketball. Almost a half hour in, even more than a half hour. Let me look here as I check my timer on the recorder. So yes, we want to try to do this in a tidy hour. So I got a lot of work to do to get to quite a few other sports. But the good thing is that we'll get into the NBA. We'll stick to basketball. And all we can discuss here, and a fascinating development that's taking place, especially in the East. We've talked about the Milwaukee Bucks over the last couple of weeks, how they've been just fading big time, even with Doc Rivers. And I believe he's coached his team to around 500, or he may be even a game under 500 at this point. And the Bucks, who have had, I'm sure for a lot of teams, they would take the Bucks' problems, knowing that they are currently a 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. And when you have Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard as your top 2 stars, I'm sure if you're the Charlotte Hornets, or even to a certain extent, if you're Greg Popovich, I would think that he would want to trade places, at least for right now. Not for the long term, considering you have Victor Wembanyama. But if you ask Greg Popovich that if you could take over the Bucks right now and see if you could remedy them, say that 5 times, in order to get them straight, in order to get themselves back on the beam, then I'm sure he would say, yeah, give me that job for the next couple of months and I'll see if I can win a title with these guys. But for the Bucks and how they performed, and even though they may currently be entrenched in that 2 spot, well, it's not really entrenched because you have the Orlando Magic and the New York Knicks just a game behind them. And the Knicks went into Milwaukee last night behind Jalen Brunson, what he scored, 43 points, and smacked them from pillar to post, 122-109. All right, maybe it wasn't complete domination from start to finish, but a 13-point win on the road in Milwaukee shows more about the Bucks than it does the Knicks, if you ask me. And knowing that we're down to the final 4 games, and for the Magic to see maybe if they could get a 2 seed, that speaks volumes for a Magic team as well, considering that they were, 3-4 weeks ago, they were around the 6-7 seed in the Eastern Conference, and they could go as high as 2, where they may be able to host 2 home series before they get to a conference final. That's just a tremendous job by Jamal Mosley, the coach, if they were to get that 2 seed. Now, with the Bucks, Magic, and Knicks separated by 1 game, and you even want to throw in Cleveland, who they're a half game behind the Knicks, and the other 3 teams above them have a game in hand, this could be a mano a mano fight to the finish to see who gets that 2 seed. And I think it's going to be imperative, more so for Orlando, New York, and Cleveland to get that than Milwaukee. Because I get it that maybe when the switch goes on, where the postseason, the curtain rises, and maybe the Bucks will then show and prove that they belong as a top 2 seed, even if they don't end up being a 2 seed in the East. But based on what they've done, and they've currently are mired in a 4-game losing streak, so if they're going to turn their season around over the course of this final week, and it ends on Sunday. They're going to have to really blitz through the schedule to win, whether it's four in a row, three or four, whatever it is, in order to keep themselves in that two slot. Could they be a dangerous team? They could be, but there are no signs that they could be a team that you could rely on or even trust for them to at least get to a conference final, let alone an NBA final. And I don't know if they have it in them. Granted that Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Bobby Portis, they were part of that championship team of 3 years ago. But with the way the, I'm not going to say the makeup of the team, but because of a second coach this year, and even Lillard, I don't want to put it all on him, but this is going to be a huge postseason for Lillard. Because the reason why he was brought here is to win a championship. And not to say that it all fell on his shoulders, because Giannis has proved that he's won a championship. Lillard has not. And Lillard, we know he's a defensive liability, and he's a guy that he's going to need to put up 30 points a game in this postseason if they're going to have any length in April, May, and maybe even June for that matter. But we'll certainly unpack this a little bit more next week when we talk about the storylines and we'll get into the playing scenarios, etc. But the Bucks, they are skating on thin ice to maybe not even get out of a first round. And remember, they didn't get out of the first round last year as a one seed. Now, that comes with a caveat because Giannis hurt his knee, I believe, maybe it was his ankle, in the first quarter of game one, where you didn't see him come back until game four, and they were down 2-1. Now, mind you, they had a 13-point lead with 6 minutes to go in game number four against the Heat, and they spit the bit. That was the big 56-point game by Jimmy Butler, where they took a 3-1 series lead, and then they went back to Milwaukee, and they miraculously won that game and won the series there in five. So the Bucks, they have a ton to prove here, despite the fact that rings could be on the fingers of those aforementioned players who won a title there in 2021. But to me, that might as well have been 50 years ago, because this team is a far cry from that team. And obviously, different cast of characters, more so Lillard than anybody else. But the Bucks are going to be one team that I'm going to keep my eye on here and have kept my eye on over the last few weeks, but even more so to see if they could keep that two seed, or if they're going to continue to spiral out of control and maybe drop down in the standings and where they lie when it comes to the opening round in about 12 days or so, because the playoffs will tip off a week from this coming Saturday. So to me, that is the big storyline heading into this final week of the NBA season on whether or not the Bucks are going to have a run in them to where they can right in the ship, stay at that two seed, maybe win three of their final four games to stay in that slot, and then exhale, start off in the postseason, and see where they go from there. I can't tell you what's going to happen here. I'm not going to predict, oh, I think the Knicks get the two or the Magic. Who knows? I have to break down their schedules, and you know what? Let's take a quick peek at that. The Bucks, oh, they have a very interesting schedule ahead. Look at this. They host the Celtics tomorrow night. Then they host the Magic. And then after that, they go to OKC, and who's their final game of the season? And that it will be this coming Sunday at Orlando. So you mean to tell me out of their final four games, now the Celtics, who knows? They're probably going to be in cruise control. They'll get blown out tomorrow night, similar to the way Milwaukee blew out Boston in Milwaukee earlier this year. So that may be a win, but home to Orlando. Interesting road test for the Magic. At the Thunder, which they're going to be fighting for a one seed out west, so they're going to need the game, and then the Magic again. So you mean to tell me that the Bucks, they're going to have to earn that two spot by all means necessary over the course of these next four games. And as far as the Orlando Magic goes, obviously we know the two games against the Bucks. They're at the Rockets tomorrow, and the Rockets, they're of course done. They're not going to make it to the postseason as they were officially eliminated over the last few days. And then they go to Philadelphia there on Friday. And Philly, who knows? Right now they're currently in the playing scenario. So we'll have to wait and see whether or not they could get out of that. I believe they're about a half game behind the Pacers as of right this moment. So, and I'll take a look at that in a second. The Knicks here over the course of this final stretch. The Knicks have the Bulls in Chicago tomorrow, then at Boston, the Nets and the Bulls again. Very easy schedule. Who knows? They could end up getting to two. Whether or not Milwaukee and Orlando cancel each other out, and the Knicks, let's say if they even run the table, because who knows if the Celtics are, they're obviously not going to need the game. They're probably going to rest players or play sparingly throughout the course of these last few games. So that's a team that maybe the Knicks can get a two seed based on their schedule. Cleveland, they have three games left, and they're all home games. Memphis, Indiana, and Charlotte. Easy schedule. Indiana, of course, they're going to have to play to see if they could stay in that sixth seed. They're currently a game ahead of Philadelphia, and they're a game and a half ahead of Miami. So not to worry there, but interesting stretch. Let's see who Indiana plays here. They have the Raptors and Cavaliers on the road, and then they have the Hawks at home. So Raptors, Hawks, two easy games, and then they have that sandwich in between by the Cavaliers. Philly has the Pistons, Magic, and Nets, and all those games are at home. So all right in front of them, and I'm hoping that Miami gets two more wins. And they have four games. They need to split their next two games. Their number was 44.5. And I'm pretty much done with my over-unders. The last one is the Heat. And I had a feeling it was going to come down to these final couple of games. But if the Heat win two of their final four and get to 45, which will, of course, surpass the 44.5 at the start of the year, I'll be 5-1 in my over-unders for 2023-24. Think about that. Now, as far as the West goes, Minnesota, Denver tied currently. And I believe they play tomorrow night, which could be for the division when you think about it. No, they actually play on Wednesday night. Now, Minnesota has the Wizards at home before going to Denver. So that's a back-to-back, which could hurt Minnesota as far as winning the one seed overall. Then they play the Hawks at home and the Suns in their building to wrap up their season. So easy schedule after that, even though the Suns, who knows, are going to be battling there. You would think to keep themselves as a sixth seed. They're currently tied with the Pelicans, although they have the tiebreaker there. But Minnesota against Denver, back-to-back there on Wednesday, that's going to be tricky. As far as the Nuggets, they're at Utah and also have to play a back-to-back too, but they'll go home to play the Timberwolves, so at least they'll be on easy, equal footing there. Then they're at the Spurs and at the Grizzlies to end the year, so they have a very easy schedule, and I would not be shocked if they get the one seed overall. Thunder, on the other hand, they have the Kings, Spurs at home, and then they wrap up, I think, with two games on the road. Let me just double-check that, as, of course, my internet is faltering here. Then they play the Bucks, as we talked about earlier, and then they end up with the Mavericks. So we'll wait to see what's going to happen with the Thunder. I think a tricky schedule for them. I think it's all in front of Denver, Minnesota, although the back end of those four games, relatively easy. But I think Denver is going to be a one seed when it's all said and done. The Clippers, two games ahead of the Mavericks as the 4-5, and it looks like you're going to have Mavericks and Clippers. Although the Suns, two games behind the Mavericks, you would think the 4-5 is going to be set. Suns, let's see if they stay ahead of the Pelicans here over the final stretch of these games. Suns, who do they have on their schedule? They have a home-and-home against the Clippers, where they're home against L.A. tomorrow night, and then they go to L.A. there on Wednesday, then to Sacramento, and then to Minnesota to close out their season. So not an easy schedule for them by any stretch, as their final three games are on the road. The Pelicans, who are a game ahead of the Sacramento Kings for that 7-8 spot in the West. They'll have at Portland, at Sacramento, at Golden State, and they play the Lakers the final game of the year. So a late road trip out West for a young Pelican team. You would think that Phoenix should survive, although Phoenix has the final three games on the road and against formidable opponents. Who knows? I would think Phoenix is based on their veteran leadership should prevail, but stranger things have happened. Then you have the Lakers and Warriors. Lakers are currently a game in the loss, but a game and a half ahead of Golden State. And they're a half game behind Sacramento. So who knows? If the Lakers could overtake, and I think that would be good for the NBA if the Lakers got the eighth seed. And here's the reason why. If the Lakers were to play the Pelicans, let's just say, in the opening round of the play-in tournament, of course, whomever wins that will go on to the postseason. So let's say even if the Lakers have to go on the road to New Orleans and they can win a game on the road in the Big Easy, if they win that game, they would avoid playing Golden State if they were to win against Sacramento. And you would avoid having a Laker-Warrior where one of those two teams are going to be home for the spring and summer. So the NBA, I'm sure, with bated breath as they hold over the final week of the season, they would want the Lakers to overtake the Kings to get the 8 seed. And even if they happen to lose to New Orleans on the road, then you have a winner-takes-all if Golden State were to win that game for the right to get the 8 seed in the Western Conference, which I'm sure the NBA would rather have that than to have the 9-10 matchup of Lakers-Warriors to see who advances and where one of those teams are going to be gone and goodbye. So that's what we have here with the NBA as we get to the final week of the season. We'll talk more about on Thursday to see where these teams are going to land as we get to the final three games at that time of the season. And the NHL, which their season isn't going to end until a week from this coming Thursday as I lace up my skates. So the NBA, as we shift to the NHL, the only big-time storyline I have here, and yes, could I talk about my Islanders? I could. And shocking that a lot of the teams in the Eastern Conference who were competing for that final playoff spot in the East, where you're looking at the Capitals or the Flyers, the Red Wings, the Penguins, the Islanders currently at this very moment, shockingly, have the 3 seed, which they will go up against Carolina if the season ended today. And they have 5 games left, so they have a game in hand with a lot of the other teams that they're going up against. Well, not necessarily. They have a game in hand against Carolina, which is not going to matter. But all the other teams that are beneath them in the standings, whether it's Pittsburgh, Washington, Philly, and remember, they're in the same division. And Pittsburgh, Philly, and Washington all are 2 points behind the Islanders. They're tied at 83 points. And when we get to Thursday's podcast, I'll get into it more as far as the schedule goes for these teams down the stretch to see where they land. Now, I know for sure the Islanders have the toughest schedule of all. They play the Rangers tomorrow night in their building. They play the Rangers on Saturday night. So that's all you need to know right there when it comes to how tough the schedule is going to be. Then they got to go to New Jersey. They play the Penguins again. And who knows if that could be for a playoff spot. And they have one other game. They play Montreal as the other game where the Canadiens, of course, they're already out to sea and done for the postseason. So out of their 5 games, 2 are against the Rangers who are going to fight for the President's Trophy and to get the top seed in the East. The Devils, who are on life support for a playoff spot, but they're still mathematically alive. The Penguins, as I mentioned, could go down to the wire. And then Montreal, who is a team you think they should beat here along the way. So the Islanders, who have played well here, they won 4 in a row. And they've had a weird stretch over the last 6-7 weeks of the season. Now think about this. The Islanders had a stretch right after that crazy outdoor game against the Rangers, if you remember there, February 18th. And you could check that. For those who have not watched, YouTube channel kicked in the groin. I was at the game. I did a vlog of it. And for whatever the reason, that people are continuing to watch that game as it continues to soar on my channel. So definitely want to peep that. If you could go ahead and do that, I would greatly appreciate it. But ever since that time that they lost that game in overtime to the Rangers, they've had a stretch a week after that where they won 6 in a row, followed by a 6-game losing streak. And now currently, they've won 6 of their last 8 games, including a 4-game winning streak as of late. A very up and down, unpredictable Islander team that, who knows, maybe over these last 5 games with a very tough schedule to boot, watch them trip up here and then not make it to the playoffs altogether, which I would not be shocked, but I got to give them credit and give their coach Patrick Roy credit for keeping this team together, cohesive, and now they're going to get to a real tough part of their schedule to close out their season, and it all starts with the Rangers there tomorrow night at UBS. But when we take a grand look at the playoffs, we talked about there in the Eastern Conference, the Bruins who beat the Panthers there on Saturday, which gives them some breathing room to win the Atlantic, you would think, when it's all said and done. And the Rangers are 3 points ahead of them for the top seed in the East. I don't know if the Bruins are going to be able to catch them. Do the Rangers and Bruins play one another here over the course of this last stretch of games? Now, the Bruins are going to play the Carolina Hurricanes tonight, so that's going to be an interesting matchup there as Carolina's trying to see if they could inch closer to the Rangers. I believe they're at 107, and I'll double-check that. Bruins have Carolina at Pittsburgh, at Washington, Ottawa. So maybe they could do the Islanders a favor by beating both the Penguins and Capitals along the way. But for Carolina, they are currently in second place, actually 5 points behind the Rangers. They should be, you would think, a long shot to win a division. You would think the Rangers are going to have that one seed when it's all said and done. Then we have Tampa, who will have the one spot entrenched there. They are 4 points behind the Maple Leafs in the division to see if they could somehow, some way overtake the Leafs to get third place in the Atlantic. And which would be interesting because if they were to get the three seed in that division, their opening round would be against the Florida Panthers. So you have that in-state rival, and I know that they've beaten the Panthers here like a drum dating back 2 years ago where they beat them in five, and the year before that they swept the Panthers, and that was the year where, no, 2 years ago they had the big season where the Panthers were the President Trophy winner before bowing out in that second round. So, interesting stretch here. That bottom rung of the wild card is going to be a fight to the finish. And the Red Wings are currently in second place in the wild card, 84 points ahead of the Penguins, Capitals, Flyers. But remember, those three teams in the Metropolitan could overtake the Islanders with a win and a loss by the Islanders. You would think there's going to be tiebreakers along the way with both or all three, Pittsburgh, Washington, Philly. So that's going to be a fight to the finish, you would think. And out west, Dallas, 5 points ahead of the Avalanche as we speak, and they beat the Avalanche last night, which pretty much would solidify the Central Division for the Stars and quite possibly the one seed overall out west. Colorado is now just 2 points ahead of the Jets, where the Jets have played well, and that's going to be interesting too because if the Jets somehow, and have a game in hand, if they snatch the two seed out of Colorado's pocket, they will have home ice in the first round against Colorado. So if that means anything for the Jets, they would want to try to get that two seed so they won't have to worry about a game seven on the road. So that's something to keep an eye on. The Canucks have a 3-point lead now. Last week it was five, maybe even six, but now it's a 3-point lead in the division where the Oilers, and let me see, they actually play one another in the coming days. Edmonton, 76 games, 99 points. Vancouver, 77 games played, 102 points. Edmonton, they will play Vancouver, I believe, on Friday. Let me just double check that. They'll have a game against the Golden Knights in their building here on Wednesday. And then, no, that's actually Saturday night. So Saturday, Vancouver goes to Edmonton, which could be for a division. And even though there's still three games for Edmonton to play after that, where they'll have San Jose at Arizona, at Colorado to end their year, where Vancouver, their final stretch of games, interestingly enough, they'll play Vegas in their building. And that game, I believe, is tonight, where Vegas will then play Edmonton there a couple nights after that. Then they go Arizona, at Edmonton, Calgary, and then at Winnipeg. Relatively easy schedule. Edmonton, Winnipeg, two of the final three games. Who knows? And with the game in hand, Edmonton could actually tie or even overtake the division when it's all said and done. So that's a race that we'll keep an eye on. Then you have the Kings, who are in the second wild card spot behind Vegas. I know Vegas currently is number one, so let me pull up my standings here as I'm going through all these different tabs. Vegas has the spot there, 92, second wild card. Nashville has the first wild card, of course. Now, Vegas is 2 points behind Nashville. The Kings have the third seed in the Pacific. And Vegas, they could overtake them because they're 1 point behind the Kings in the division. So, a lot of spots up for grabs. Wild card in particular, you have three teams out west. Or really, you can think about it. Even though they're 5 points behind, all right, we could say that they're in a battle. Forget about the Wild. They are 9 points, although mathematically alive. Forget about them. really what you have here down the stretch of the season is the wild card spot in the East, because you have a bunch of teams that are fighting for that second seed in the wild card. And then what's going to happen in the Pacific between Edmonton and Vancouver? Also, will Vegas overtake the Kings? And then will the Kings drop to have to play the one seed when it's all said and done? You have a bunch of different storylines there. And with the season ending a week from this Thursday, you know I have my fingers on the pulse when it comes to the NHL as we get down to the final home stretch of the regular season. Now let me kick it into high gear as I put on my cleats, batting helmet, and gloves as I dig into the batter's box to discuss baseball. And over the first 10 days of the season, here's what you have so far. And I'll get into some storylines afterwards where it comes to some pitchers who could be either doomed or are doomed when it comes to their health, and some big-time pitchers to boot. But I'll start off with this. Right now, what we're looking at here in Major League Baseball, we're 1/16th into the season, and I understand that's the slightest of fractions, but before you know it, you're going to be 1/8 into the season when we get to the middle part or the end of the week, when you think about it. So for the standings here, the teams that have been surprises right out of the gate, I have to say the Cleveland Guardians, because who would have thought that they'd be 7-2 at this point? Now, mind you, they suffered a huge blow. Justin Bieber is going to need Tommy John surgery as he blew out his elbow. So the ace of their staff is not going to toe the rubber the rest of the year. That is going to be a big blow for the Guardians. Now, who knows? Will they be able to piecemeal it together with guys like Tristan McKenzie, among others, in a very weak AL Central, considering that the Twins, you want to talk about disappointments, have gotten off to a very slow start to their season. They're 3-4. They have a couple of games that they need to make up. But for the Twins, who have not gotten off on the right foot, a lot of people think that they're going to win the division by rote. But for the Guardians, as well as they've done so far, is this something that could be sustainable? I don't think so without their big-time starting pitcher. But this is what we have here over the course of the first week and a half in this baseball season. Then, another surprise, if you ask me, and we've seen this last year when they got off to a, I believe they were 20-9, the Pittsburgh Pirates. They come off a weekend winning 2 out of 3 against Baltimore. They're 8-2 to start off their year. There's a lot of good vibes in the Three River City for a Pirate team that, in another weak division, and I know the Cubs could be a team that, when it's all said and done, could win the NL Central, but you got to like what you see out of Pittsburgh so far. Good young players, starting staff with Mitch Keller, and maybe even Paul Skenes, the number one pick there out of LSU, who could maybe be at some point brought up sometime in the late part of spring, early summer. And especially if they're going to be in the mix, you would think that maybe they will anoint him and promote him to the big leagues and have that extra arm in their rotation to bolster that franchise to maybe, dare I even say, playoff competition when we get into the teeth of the summer. Obviously, it's a long way from now, but you got to like what you see so far from the Pirates, although it could be short-lived. That we'll have to wait and see. But another surprise that I have to throw out there are the Boston Red Sox. 7-3, they were helped by a sweep in Oakland. Okay, fine. But they have done relatively good. They split the first 4 games in Seattle. They won 2 out of 3 in Anaheim before that sweep in Oakland. And yes, you heard that right. Wait, they started off their year on the West Coast? They haven't played a home game yet? They have not. So for the Red Sox to start off winning 7 of their first 10, and they open up their season tomorrow against the Baltimore Orioles. So that's going to be a very interesting test for them as they come home. And after a long road trip and a day off today, to have the Orioles come in. And the Orioles have played pretty well here. They are 5-4. Now, of course, they lost 2 out of 3 in Pittsburgh, as I mentioned. But we would think that the Orioles are going to be built for a long regular season. And that's with the Yankees ahead of them at 8-2. Great start without Gerrit Cole, as we know. But for Cole, he's going to start throwing this week, maybe as early as tomorrow. So that's going to be interesting. And I'm sure it's going to be just short toss, whatever that's going to entail. So for Cole to be able to try to ramp himself up to the point where maybe he could come back around Memorial Day, or maybe even early June for that matter, because it's going to take some time. They're not going to rush Cole, especially after this Fast start by the Yankees here. So we would think that if Cole is on schedule for his rehab, for him to get himself some rehab starts down, whether it be in Tampa or somewhere in single A, and work his way up to where he could get to the big ball club by the start or the unofficial start of summer, that would be a boon, because I'm sure the Yankees will be in good stead at that time. And for the Yankees, they're going to have the Marlins come in, and that's another disappointment. A team that made the postseason last year, they finally got off the snide there with a rocking chair win in St. Louis after they started off 0-9 and avoided that dreaded 10-game losing streak to start the year. But yes, their consolation for winning their first game of the year is coming to the Bronx to play the Yankees for 3 games. And who knows? If they win one game, I'm sure they would get out of town and be happy. But mind you, they'll have to go play the Braves this weekend in their building down in Miami. So a very tough start for the Marlins after a successful year under Skip Schumacher last year. But that's what you have there with some early season surprises and even disappointments for that matter. And other disappointments, we could talk about the Astros, 3-7. They got swept by the Yankees in the opening start of their season. And then they played the Texas Rangers, who are off to a good start in their own right. They are currently 6-3. But the Astros are going to try to see on a wraparound series. They lost the first 2 games to Texas on Friday, Saturday before winning yesterday. And they do play in Texas to wrap up their 4-game series tonight. So we'll see how they fare there. But the Astros off to a slow start. And you have to wonder whether or not they have a long year ahead of them. So let's keep that in mind. And with Alex Bregman scheduled to be a free agent, if they happen to be out of the wild card or even the divisional running when it comes to the playoffs, when we get to July. Now, again, that is way premature to say, but just throwing that out there, people. Receipts, make sure you hang on to them to see whether or not if the Astros are going to be in the mix for a wild card or division when we get to the teeth of the summer. But they've gone off to a sluggish start, 3-7 in the basement there with the A's in the AL West. And speaking of the A's, I didn't mention this on Thursday's podcast, but for Oakland, is their final season in the Bay Area before they go to Sacramento for 3 years. They're going to play in a minor league ballpark. The minor league team of the San Francisco Giants, how ironic, the team across the Bay, where they're going to set themselves up for 3 years before we would think in all likelihood to go to Vegas, as they're going to start breaking ground on that stadium, you would think, in the months to come. So for the A's, this is it. The last call to go see the A's by the Bay Area. We could talk about it ad infinitum, how just terrible this is all unfolded. That team's going to leave at the end of the year with the history that they've had, the 70s back-to-back-to-back teams of the A's with Joe Rudy and Burt Campaneris, Raleigh Fingers, Catfish Hunter, etc. And even the 3 years that they had success in the late 90s with the Bass Brothers, Canseco, McGuire, etc. Yes, that's all going to go up in smoke as we get deeper into the season. And of course, that final few games in September into October where the A's will no longer be a part of Oakland. So that's some bad news there. But then some other news of note when it comes to health of pitchers. Spencer Strider, you could think now maybe the ace of the team, even though you have Max Fried there, the longtime lefty who's going to be a free agent after this year. Well, Spencer Strider had his elbow looked at, felt some discomfort. It's been reported that he does have damage in his elbow. How extensive it is, it's unbeknownst to us right now, whether it's a partial tear or a full tear. If it's a full tear, he's done for the year. If it's partial, it could be similar to maybe even a scenario where Masahiro Tanaka, the former Yankee, remember, he had a partial tear in his elbow, didn't become a full tear, and he pitched on that over, I believe, like the last 4 or 5 years of his contract. And was a very good pitcher, especially in the postseason during his time as a Yankee. Now, again, not knowing the extent of it, if he's going to have to be set for the knife and have Tommy John surgery, that we'll have to wait and see. But that could be a huge blow to a Brave team that would lose a player who's very young and signed a long-term deal, a team-friendly deal for that matter. But to not have him be at the top of your rotation, big expectations for the Braves this year, that's going to be a huge blow for Atlanta. And besides that, that's what you have there with baseball. I'll get into more about what's happening in baseball as we get to Thursday's podcast. And the NFL, you had some re-signings there with players who are staying put. Whether your name is Kyle Duggar, the safety there in New England, he signed 4 years, $58 million. In Carolina, Derek Brown, the defensive tackle, had a big year, $96 million for him. And even Mike Dana, the defensive end for the Chiefs, team friendly, of course, with all the money going to Chris Jones and even Drew Tranquil so far this offseason, even with the quarterback Patrick Mahomes renegotiating his restructuring his contract to bring in these players or to keep these players on their team. He signed a 3-year, $24 million deal. The NFL will be quiet, I would think, for a couple of weeks until we get to the draft, which will be 2 weeks from this coming Thursday. And I'm sure all the draft Knicks and everybody's going to be geeked up and ready to go for what will be a wild 3 days. And I'm sure you may have some trades along the way leading up to the draft. So we'll have plenty of time to sink our teeth into that. And that is it, my good people. Another episode in the books. Thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for listening to what it is I have to say about what goes on in the world of sports. Believe you me, it is certainly appreciated twice and even multiple times, the 2 times I just mentioned. If you haven't done so, please subscribe, rate, review. Throw me a few stars, write a review. You know the drill. Also, go to my YouTube channel at JReels. Subscribe there. Please comment, share with your friends, family, foes, etc., who love sports, like sports, whatever it may be. And then you also have my Instagram, TikTok, Facebook for any questions, comments, suggestions. The JReels Podcast, Twitter, X, JReels1, just the number. The old-fashioned way, the JReels Podcast at gmail.com. Hit me up. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. It's in the blood. It's in the DNA, as I like to say. Talking sports is what I do since birth. And as long as I'm alive and breathing, I'm going to continue to march forward with nothing but fire, passion, fury, energy, with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, analysis, praise, feelings on anything and everything that happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the JReels Podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx to South Beach to South Central to South Pacific and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the JReels Podcast, on the flip, baby.